Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Insightful, fun conversations with some of the best LGBTQ writers from around the world. The Illusions Podcast.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Dave Martino.
Yes.
Back in the room. Here we are again.
Again.
So we've got another writer, and she's got a book out. Came out in April, I believe. It's called Grace Period. Elizabeth Nonis. Thank you for being here, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's nice to meet you.
Hopefully you say that at the end of the show. But So Elizabeth, this is the first time you've been on this show. So who exactly are you? Where did you come from? And why did you decide to write books? Like, what's wrong?
Oh my goodness, there's a lot of questions in that one question.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like we'd like to get to know you. So, Elizabeth, where did it start for you for writing? How's that?
So, Grace Period, you are correct, it came out in April, and it is my fourth published novel, but my third published novel came out in 1994. And
last century.
Mm-hmm, I actually started writing when I was in college. I wrote poetry, and I was an English major, and I wrote poetry, and it wasn't until many years later that I realized I did not write good poetry. After college, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. I had started getting interested in photography. After I turned in my thesis, which was a collection of my poems, I didn't write another poem for 6 months. So I think poetry was not meant to be for me. But I was very interested in photography, and I lived in New York City. And at some point I decided that I wanted to go get an MFA in photography because I was going to be a photographer. And I happened to run into somebody that I had grown up with, hadn't seen for 10 years. And I told her that I was going to apply to RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, for still photography. And she said, oh, yeah, there are two really good film schools in New York. You should do that. Why go to Rochester? Which is a very provincial New York City thing to say. And I did not say, no, I don't want to go to film school. This is still photography, but I don't know. I said, oh, okay. So I applied to the two film schools in Manhattan, and I ended up going to NYU Film School. And I realized that made more sense than anything I'd ever done because nothing affected me the way films did. I really am answering the writing question.
Yeah.
So I go to film school for 3 years, and I have my award-winning final film, thesis film, and that got me an agent, and I went to L.A., and this is like 1977, and people looked at my award-winning film, people in the industry, and they said, oh, this is great. Technically, you could direct. You're a woman. nobody's going to give you any money. Have you thought about writing? That's when I started writing screenplays. Screenplays are much closer to poetry than prose, actually, because it's sort of very condensed and, you know, you have to come up with images for things. So I started writing. I did that for a while and ended up being very frustrated by the industry. I had minor, more than modest success, or less than modest success, or hardly no success. Something got optioned but not made, and that was actually a positive look at death and dying, about a family torn, once close family torn apart by a secret because the parents don't want to tell the 16-year-old daughter that the mother is sick. And the kid ends up learning about hospice and confronting her parents. And anyway, that got optioned but not made. And once I had done something like that that really meant something to me, it was very hard for me to go back and just develop ideas that I thought would appeal to a general audience. And my partner at the time said, well, why don't you write a book? Because I had been collecting scenes. I'd been writing scenes about women. Nothing connected and not one through storyline, but I'd been writing scenes, disconnected scenes. And she said, why don't you write a book? And I went, a book? But I did. And that's when I wrote my first novel. Once I had done that, there was kind of no going back because then I could just write whatever I wanted to write. And I didn't have to worry about, is this going to appeal to this kind of an audience or that kind of an audience? Or
Yeah. It's different.
It's very different. And of course, once I started writing novels, it was like, oh, this makes more sense than anything I've ever done.
Right. There's a lot more freedom. There's a lot more freedom to writing a novel and getting it out. And especially these days, you know, that's a good thing.
Right.
Now this book that you've just written or just had released, Grace Period, let's talk about the premise. What's the basic premise of this story?
So the basic premise is Hannah, 70-year-old Hannah, is a writing professor at a college. She is about to retire, and she's called away from her retirement party because her 60-year-old wife, Grace, who's an art history professor, is in the emergency room, and Grace dies. Now Hannah has to figure out what her life is going to be now, because she hadn't entirely planned what she was going to do in her retirement, but Grace was going to have a sabbatic year, and that's when Hannah was going to kind of figure out the rest of her life. So now she has to do that in a whole different way.
Which point of view person do you use?
First person, Hannah.
How do you get into the headspace of Hannah to write that character? Is it a lot of your own life that you put into it, like your own experience sort of thing?
Yes and no. I was actually thinking, because I did teach screenwriting I taught various forms of writing, but the last 25 years of my teaching career, I was teaching screenwriting and writing for video games and emerging media here in Ithaca at Ithaca College. I obviously drew on a lot of that experience, but sort of the teacher in me sometimes wants to like take a page from the book and say, okay, this was something that my mother used to say. And this was something that happened to me, but then I put it in this scene that I made up. Yes, my own experience and other people's experience, and then stuff that you just make up, and who knows where that comes from. Maybe other guests on your show have said that they know exactly how that all comes together, but it's still a really interesting process to me.
Well, how did you deal emotionally with writing about death? Was it difficult to do?
That's a good question. It was difficult, but it was and it wasn't difficult to write about death because, as I said, my script from 1979 was this positive look at death and dying. it's always been a topic, or maybe not the main topic, but it's entered into many of the things that I've written. I lost a lot of friends. I used to live in Los Angeles. I lost a lot of friends in the 80s and earlier 90s to AIDS. One of my really close friends in LA had a stroke and died suddenly. So I feel like I've dealt with a lot of loss in my life, and it just seems like a natural, especially now at my age, because I am in my 70s, it's very present in ways that it didn't used to be. I think all of my books have been about how lesbians make community and family, and I've sort of brought us through my adulthood. This is how you establish relationships, and this is what happens in a long-term relationship, and this is what happens in a longer-term relationship. And then now we're at the age where you think something is going to happen, like Hannah just assumes. She's 10 years older than Grace. She assumes that she's going to die first, and Grace surprises her by dying very suddenly. Part of me felt like, well, this is just the next natural thing for me to write about. Another part of me felt, well, you know, my spouse is in the other room while I'm writing this book, so this is not
right
taken from my life. I mean, it is, but it isn't.
As long as she's not poisoning the dinner.
Well, and she that we did have some heated conversations, because I said, I'm not writing about us. This isn't about us. You know, I'm not killing you off.
Yet.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, because I was around too, I think, and even Dave somewhat, he's a little younger, but when you're around during the times where a lot of people, and you face a lot of death already, and you're young, it just seems distant. And then all of a sudden time goes by, and now you're, you know, at an older age, and you realize that, wow, it might be a little closer than it seemed.
Right, right.
But so you say positive look at death on this and plus the play. How do you do that? How do you make it positive? Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think some of this book is really funny. I was trying for that because it's a dark topic, and it's good to leaven that with a little humor. And I think Hannah has this whole little riff where she's at the funeral home, and the funeral director, you know, speaks only in euphemisms. She refers to this as once you're dealing, she says it's like we'd entered the veil of euphemism. Grace hadn't died. She had passed. The funeral director asks if they'd made pre-need arrangements. You know, Grace, what is he talking about in pre-need? She starts thinking, it's like, I could do a comedy routine about this. You know, pre-need, post-need. She realizes that people don't have a sense of humor about death. She kind of does, because it's the only way she can, I guess, get through it.
Where do you draw on the comedy? Like, how do you, because it is a topic that a lot of people don't want to talk about as it is, never mind talk about it and then have it be humorous. How do you get the timing for that in there, and how far can you go with humor in something like this?
But I want to say, well, you go just far enough. I don't.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, she talks to herself a lot. She talks to Grace. She thinks she gets little messages from Grace, who says, you know, you can't just lie around and wallow. She gets very indignant. I'm not wallowing. It's like, oh, maybe I am. Well, I should get up and do something else. It's just finding the humor in situations where, like, she has to go to she promises her friends who have a big 4th of July party that she'll go. She doesn't want to. So there's humor in that situation where she gets there and tries to avoid.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more.
And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Quite interacting or even thinking about what she's going to wear to go to the party. I'm feeling like Flannery O'Connor said, if somebody asks you what your story is about, the only thing you can do is read it to them. So I feel like I can't really explain why this is funny, but there are really funny scenes here, there, and you know, sort of interspersed throughout.
Well, so what do you hope people get out of the book? Like when someone picks it up, takes it home and reads it, what is it you hope that they take away?
That you can move forward after great loss. And, you know, I don't know that there's, this is exactly how you do it. I mean, one of the things Hannah says it, or I say it for her, but, you know, grief is not linear. You know, everybody says, oh, it's going to take time. You just need time. And it's like, well, you do, but you might feel really better after a certain amount of time and then really worse the next day. And so it isn't, as I said, it isn't linear. But getting through with the help of one's community, as much as one might want to isolate, I think just the hope that one can get through a devastating loss, however imperfectly that happens. And also that I'm personally not of the opinion that age is just a number, because as the number gets bigger, I mean, you know, if you're 70 or if you're 73 or 74, I mean, that's how old you are. But it isn't, it's not that 60 is the new 40, but I want them to look at age differently. Yeah, because I think Hannah is pretty, she's kind of depressed, but with a sense of humor and vibrant, and she's got more to do with her life.
Well, I'm 30, and I'm starting it the third time over. So. So there you go. It never changes. Well, where do you get your influences from? Like with the writing part, like when you're writing, who do you read? Like who do you like?
That's a good question, because sometimes, well, I love reading mysteries. And I loved reading mysteries before I was interviewed for this show. but I love mysteries, and I read them not so much to solve the mystery, but to see, to get into whatever world is being developed. When I read non-genre fiction, sometimes I get very impatient because I think, come on, come on, come on, come on. You know, like, where's the plot? So imagine my surprise when I'm writing a first-person narrative and this poor woman has just lost her wife and she's in her head so much. And it was like, where's the plot? Where's something going to happen? I like Michael Nava.
Oh, yeah.
I've reread him. And I am a fan of Joan Didion's essays.
Well, and of course, me and like Dave and I, too. You like our books.
Sure.
Of course.
you got to always say that.
Got to say that. And I can't read horror, and I can't watch horror. But mysteries I can do. Dark I can do.
I'm out.
I do get scared. And then sometimes I just read interviews with writers just to remind myself that it's, oh yeah, other people get stuck.
Well, do you feel your approach to writing has changed over time? Would you have written this novel differently earlier in your career?
I don't know that I would have written, I don't think I would have written this novel because my subject matter ages as I do. Somebody died in an earlier book, they would have been younger and it would have been a different, it would not have been this situation. Yeah, I would not have written this book. My writing habits or my practice has changed. And I think I think I've gotten better, but I think writing becomes easier and harder at the same time the more you do it. Because like at the beginning, my first book was like, I was just so thrilled that I had a paragraph and then another paragraph. And, you know, it's like, wow, this is great. And even a few years after I finished it, I looked back, you know, I was reading passages from it. And I thought, well, where's the rest? You needed a little more here. Writing gets easier because you develop a certain facility. You know, it's like, oh, now I need some dialogue. I can do dialogue. Or oh, we should have some description now, you know. And so the more you do it, and when I say easier, it's easier to do. The facility grows. But why it's harder, or why I think it gets harder, is two reasons. One, I can see the difference between what I wanted to get onto the page or the screen and what actually made it there. I can see the discrepancy between what I want and what I'm achieving, where at the beginning, it was just like enough to get it down. And then it gets harder also because I think my ideas are more complex or subtle, layered.
Yeah, you become much more aware of things as you progress, right? And then so it gets more detailed and more intricate. And then that in itself is what makes it hard, I think, because you're always looking forward and you don't feel good enough to do something, you know what I mean? And then you do it and you kind of think, well, yeah, it's kind of an ongoing thing.
Right. And yeah, which is the joy and the pain.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good, it's a good thing. And, and that, but I know what you mean. It's a struggle, but that's good. That's how we get better. And before you know it, you're Dean Koontz.
No, maybe you're Dean Koontz. I am not. I would be too scared to be Dean Koontz.
Yeah, that would be a bit much, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So what do you plan on doing now? Like, what's next for Elizabeth?
I am working on a sequel. I had not planned that. I didn't know what I was going to do next. I wrote a short, I guess kind of a short story that featured Hannah, which I find, I don't know about you, but I find when I get to the end, it's like very hard to finish a book. It's kind of hard to say goodbye and to the characters. And it's like, oh, nothing is going to be as good as this, or I won't like the next ideas. And what if I don't ever have another idea? So often I get the idea for the next project when I'm finishing one. I had a short story and it was about Hannah. And I thought, oh, well, isn't this sweet? This is just me saying goodbye to the character. Well, that's good. Cause it took place a little bit after the time that the book ends. And then I started another story, not about Hannah, not about Grace, not none of these characters. And I had a deadline that I was trying to submit it somewhere. And I gave it to my spouse to read. And my spouse is Nancy Ferriano, who was the founding editor and publisher of Firebrand Books. I gave her this story that I had written. And she went, these were not her, I'm not quoting her directly, but she basically said, that's so great. It's kind of soft. I wouldn't submit this anywhere. I thought, oi. And then I thought, well, now I have to write something else. And turned out to be another Hannah story. That's the other thing I find about writing is that I may not be thinking about my characters, but they do a lot of work without me. And this was another Hannah story, and I was pretty pleased with how it came out. So I am working on a sequel.
Well, what's your relationship with Hannah then? Like, how do you experience that character?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I feel like she's somebody I kind of know, but I'm getting to know her better. She doesn't want to just lie around, I realize, because I think part of the problem I'm having with this next idea is it's hard to write about somebody who's grieving because you want to give the right amount of time for them to be in their grief, but that would not be a very interesting story to read. And I think right now, Hannah is, my relationship with her is, I'm not really going to give you too many ideas until you come up with something for me to do in this next book.
Do you hear Hannah? Do you have an inner monologue? Is that how you write?
Yeah, she definitely has a voice. And somebody, since I used to teach screenwriting, one of my former students has read this book and said, you know, had you cast, you know, could you see this as a movie, which I absolutely could. And, you know, did I cast as I was writing it? And I know a lot of people who do that, and a lot of my students would do that because it helped them envision their characters. And I don't do that. I mean, Hannah is a very specific person to me, but I can't say, oh, she'd be played by this actor or this actor. But I have a very clear, maybe not entirely of her face, but like of her body and how she holds herself and how she dresses and a little bit what she sounds like.
Are you going to go outside of this type of writing and do something different or go back to poetry, do you think, ever? Or
no poetry. No, that was...
No.
No poetry. Not that there's anything wrong with poetry, but it doesn't need me. It's doing really well without me. I really do like the freedom of writing, let's call it prose, instead of screenwriting, or to differentiate it from screenwriting. My prose is affected by my screenwriting because I like dialogue, and I like it to be very... I like to pack a lot of information into as few words as possible. So it's very economical. Prose allows me the connective tissue that you aren't allowed to have in screenwriting. Because in screenwriting, it's just what a character says or what we're going to see on the screen. But you can't explain like how characters are related or what the backstory is. You have to figure out how you're going to show that. So I like that prose allows me to make something, I hope, visual and move along, but also give some narrative explanation. I like writing not like a nonfiction book, but if I had an essay topic, I would do that, which I don't have right now. I did write a book about writing based on a course that I taught. It's called Story Workout Exercises to Help You Connect to the Stories That You Want to Tell. Because my big belief is that it's your connection to your story that your reader relates to, even if they're not aware of that.
Do you have a website, social media, places that you like to interact with readers and fans?
I have a website, elizabethnonis.com. I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram. Facebook is just me, my name, and Instagram is E-L-I-S Nonis.
Okay, perfect. Now, we're going to have all of that up on our website so people can find it. Now, the book is called Grace Period, and the author's been with us, Elizabeth Nonis. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.